Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture. With your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection. Tonight's guest, who spent his working life telling stories about people or helping people tell their own story, released his first book last fall. The Excalibur Parchment is part of a trilogy that pits spy agencies, druids, academics, and Christians against each other in the quest for the power of a mystical sword. And a mythical sword. Barry Doyle has since written about his experiences on the promotion and book signing trail, and he's on the phone with us tonight from his home office in Midland to give us his insights. But first, let's listen to Francis Street from Peter Tichlar's Better Things CD.
Down on Francis Street, I'm keeping my ear to the ground. Down here listening for any sign of the healing that's coming round. I'm here to pray for peace for all these broken and hungry ones, trapped by the tracks and factories that keep their longing and wonder down on the broken down side of town. So many coming and going, the smell of sausage comes in my nose. My mother puts her supper on and hopes her children are coming home. But so many of them won't, so hard not to feel like dirt. They're not so much looking to be scratched where it itches, they want healing for where it hurts. And they're not looking in any church. If you listen close, you can hear the sound of the many streams hidden underground on the broken down side of town. Under Francis Street,
and now to our conversation with Barry Doyle. Good evening, Barry.
How you doing?
Not bad. Now, the Excalibur Parchment came out last fall. What's been the reaction to the book so far?
Well, it's been it's been very interesting. It's been very humbling. There have been some excellent comments and some great reviews, and I appreciate all of them. And the biggest thing for me is all of a sudden I realized, okay, I thought my job was done, but really my job has just begun. I mean, I've got to market this thing. I've got to push this thing. But it's been going really well. The reviews on Amazon have been fine. Have been excellent. Fine. That's understating it. I've heard from people in South Korea, in Australia, in Singapore, that have emailed me personally and said, you know, hey, I got the book and it's really great. There've been some comparisons. One reviewer compared me to Ken Follett, Pillars of the Earth, and they are not Eye of the Needle and those books. Someone else compared me to Tom Clancy, Hunt for Red October, and that kind of thing. And then others have said it's like a Christian Da Vinci Code. So that's nice. It's very humbling because all of a sudden you realize, man, those are incredible writers. Those are top of the line. Wow, to even be thought of in the same breath is very humbling. And then, as they say, that sort of shakes you up. And then you realize, yeah, you can't sit on the laurels. You gotta work, mm-hmm. And the work has just begun.
Well, looking at those comparisons, I've read Eye of the Needle and Pillars of the Earth. I've read probably most of Tom Clancy, and I've read Dan Brown. When you're looking at that kind of comparison, were you influenced by those type of writers? Was that a style you were looking for? Is that just the type of book you yourself like to read?
No, actually, I'm a very eclectic reader. I've got all kinds of. I like historical mysteries. I like suspense thrillers. I like modern mysteries. I'm sort of all over the map that way. I have read them. I have read those writers, of course. Did they influence me? I don't know. You know, I think you are influenced probably subconsciously a lot of the time. You're influenced. I hope if they influenced me, it was more in a sense that they influenced me for good and challenged me and showed me what excellence is and influenced me to strive for that rather than anything along the line. My book is a little different in the sense that it straddles two time periods. So I guess the closest would be Da Vinci Code, but I took a totally different tack, obviously, than Dan Brown, mm-hmm. because first of all, mine is not an attack on the church, so it's a little hard to say. But I would say if it influenced me at all, probably influenced me to strive for excellence.
Well, in looking at that, are you the type of reader that when you're reading these kind of books, you're suddenly caught? You know, something catches your attention as a writer, and you're going, "Oh, that's a neat way of looking at that. That's a neat way of structuring it." You know, have you sort of found yourself kind of tearing these apart to sort of help you in what you're trying to do?
I wish I could be so analytical. No, I read a book and I say, "Wow, that was good," or "Yeah, that was all right," or "Why did I waste my time on that one?" And then I move on. I don't do deep thinking. I do not do deep thinking. It's not my gifting, shall we say.
Mm-hmm. Well, looking at this, and I'm thinking of some of the people who might not have heard our interview in the fall, can you give us a short synopsis of what the Excalibur Parchment is all about?
The premise of the book is that King Arthur, the legendary King Arthur, is not so much a legend. We have a one of the protagonists is an old professor who is a theologian and a historian and an archaeologist. He's kind of a mix of all three, and he believes firmly because he has found a parchment that indicates that not only was Arthur real. And existed, but in fact he was an early convert to Christianity. His sword Excalibur was created and forged by the archdruid Merlin, who hates the church. And Merlin wants to get the sword back. It has been imbued with some supernatural powers. That the Druids have put in, because they, of course, are a pagan, pantheistic society. So the premise is that Arthur was real, and Excalibur exists, and there's a group of people who are out in the 14th century, in the 1300s, that are out to get that sword back for the Druids, and it's the source of their power. Then we skip to the 21st century, obviously when this professor is looking, and we find that the sword is still missing. He's got a pretty good idea that he knows he can find it, that it not only is it real, but he can find it, and there are actually Druids out there who are still trying to get it back because they see it as a weapon to use to destroy the church and to destroy modern society, the Judeo-Christian society that we know, and then take power for themselves. So it's a hunt for the sword in the 21st century. In the 14th century, as we delve into this parchment, The monk, the young monk that wrote the parchment, was actually trying to hide the sword and protect the sword from the Druids. So we got these two stories going on, and yet both of them, both the one protagonist, the young monk, and the journalist who is the second main protagonist in the modern centuries, they're both guys that are filled with doubt, insecurities. One of them's not even sure about prayer and how to pray. That's the young monk, and he's sort of all confused, and he comes into a new understanding of who God is in this book. But the modern journalist is a modern workaholic. I don't need people. He's basically shut people out of his life. He's been hurt in life, and he shut people out. So between the two of them, the story bounces back and forth between the two centuries, and the hunt that goes on until we finally do realize that the attack on the church, that you see ISIS and all the stuff that's going on. It's a horrific story today, not only the Sydney attack yesterday, but the story today about the Taliban and the attack on the school. When you think about those things, you realize that this is horrific. This is not normal evil. This is something different. And the church and society is under attack in an almost satanic way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and looking,
that's the long version.
That's the long version. And if we go any further, you'll get into spoilers. So.
Yeah, I don't want to go too far.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break and then continue our conversation with writer Barry Doyle. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM.
Yes, it is. The glowing pages of this open book ring with echoes of paradise. What I see out there from my rocking chair makes the living waters rise. It's making me weep, moving over the deep. And where it comes to rest, and where it's going to next is anybody's guess. And yet it's anybody's guess. I won't be going nowhere. No, I'll be right here in my rocking chair.
Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Anybody's Gift from the Better Things CD by Hamilton, Ontario singer-songwriter Peter Tigler. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with writer Barry Doyle. Barry, one of the things we're looking at is now that the book is out, sort of the hard work of marketing it began. And you blogged about some of your experiences on that whole book promotion, book signing trail. What surprised you the most as you were starting to promote the Excalibur Parchment?
I surprised me the most. My background is in journalism and public relations, and I have I've had a very good career in that, and I've done media training seminars, and I've done marketing and campaigns for major companies and so on and so forth. I surprised myself in the sense that I realized I was my own worst client. Every other time I've had a client and I've said, okay, this is what we're going to do. And they've said, okay, you're the expert. And we've gone out and we've done it. And I've never had any feedback. I've never had any arguments. I found out with myself, I was, I'd go to bed at night thinking, okay, I got to do this, I got to do that. And then I wake up in the morning thinking, I don't think that's such a good idea. I'm not going to do that. And so I was second-guessing myself all over the place. I also found out that when I do campaigns for other people, there are other people to help do the job. I surprised myself in the sense that I realize now with this that there's nobody else but me. I am my own writer. I am my own marketing department. I am my own publicity assistant. I am my own secretary. I am my own dog's body. I am my own janitor. My office is just a disaster. This week I finally decided I got to clean it up, and I'm finding notes to myself that I wrote and said, you should do this. And I think, you know, that wasn't a bad idea. Too bad I didn't do it. So I think I surprised myself most.
Well, and that actually doesn't sound unusual to me, as I've talked to writers and even other artists over the past few years, and that is that that's one of the biggest challenges right now is because of the way the industry has been going, writers are finding themselves having to be their marketers. You know, once they get a book done, now they've got to market it and get it out there and sell it. How challenging is it for someone? You know, you found it challenging for someone who had those skills. So how more challenging is it for someone who hasn't spent, you know, a lifetime doing PR and marketing?
I think it would be extremely challenging, almost overwhelming, to the point that it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't go out and hire somebody to do it, which is money out of their pocket. It's one of the big... I think one of the big downfalls of the modern publishing scene today is that I was talking to a friend of mine who actually is a Hollywood screenwriter and a writer. He's done his own he's got his own novels out, and Coleman Luck, and Coleman told me that he was talking to somebody. Was an executive editor at one of the major Christian publishing houses, and this person told him that that the only thing, the only fiction that anybody is buying, which, let me put a caveat in here, I don't believe this for one second, and yet I see the Christian bookstores are loaded with this stuff, and that's Amish romance. And it blew his mind. He says, well, what about young writers coming up that need, you know, that are good, that should be published? Basically, she said, we're not interested in that because it's too much effort for them. And that's one of the big fallacies. One of the big problems, they're not willing to put the time and effort into finding out new writers and then putting their money where their mouth is and helping these writers develop and what have you. And market and all these things. And they also said that where they want to put their money is in people like, and I'm not picking on Max Lucado, but that's the name that was given to Coleman. Something like Max Lucado, they will spend all the marketing budget on Max Lucado selling books, which is kind of silly. You know, advertising his books in Christianity Today and all these places all over the states and doing major pushes to the bookstores. Come on, Max Lucado's books are so good they would sell anyway. Why don't you put the money in and the effort into developing new writers? Mm-hmm. Not happening. So, new writers, if they get published at all, even by a major house, are on their own, and. You've got a rapid, immense learning curve in order to market your books because you're not getting any help from the books from the bookstores, you're not getting the help from the publishers, you are on your own, and that's sad.
Yeah, and I had a similar conversation a few years ago at Write Canada with another person involved in publishing in Canada who said the same thing, is that the marketing is going to the books that they know will sell, and that basically most writers are having to do 90% of the marketing themselves.
Exactly. And that's because, I think, it's because these good houses have been bought out by secular businesses, Harper Row and Random House, and all they care about is the bottom line. You know, like, as long as you show a profit to our shareholders at the end of the year, we'll let you be Christian. But if there's any problems, we'll cut you off. You gotta make a profit. If you don't make a profit, you're out. Well, the only way I can make a profit is to make sure that I publish books by people who I know will sell. It's a catch-22.
Yeah.
Sad catch-22, and the writers are left holding the bag.
Yeah. You briefly mentioned, just before we got a break, you briefly mentioned bookstores. And one of the things you write in your blog on this whole topic is that bookstores are uninterested in working with authors to build traffic in their stores. I'm just looking at this. Is this sort of another sign of the fact that bricks and mortar stores are on their way out?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a sign that the stores, the store owners, are not prepared to move into different methods of thinking, different methods of being creative. There is one store I did a book signing at in Toronto, Faith Family Books, that has got the idea, I think, and does a great job. But most Christian bookstores, I've actually physically gone into some of these bookstores and literally been thrown out because we don't do that kind of thing, meaning book signings and events. We don't do that kind of thing. And I look around, and that store is empty. And I think, is it because the day of the bookstore is over? No. I think it's because they just don't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm. And I think we found, too, that over the years that if you don't adapt and modify to the way the market's going, that does mean that things are going to end at some point in time.
I look at this other store in a phase in Toronto, and I see a store that's thriving. I see a store that's got lots of people in it, and I see a store that has all kinds of gift areas and all kinds of unique ways. It's got a cafe. It's got all kinds of things that are designed to draw the customer in. And they're in a big location, the big store, in a prime location, in a mall. And I'm sure it's costing them money. But, you know, hey, they're doing it right.
Yep. Well, we need to take a quick final break, and then we'll come back and finish up our conversation with writer Barry Doyle. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM.
Beneath the earth, above the skies, the healing trickle is on the rise. It's hard to see where it's coming from, for no eye has seen the better things to come. The healing river and this trickle of song can only be contained for so long. Yeah, an ocean kiss of tenderness is holding us together with a bond so strong. We're heading back to the willows where our hearts are hung. Tentacles of life are spilling off our tongue. High and low, rich and poor, far and wide.
Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Bond So Strong, Peter, from Peter Tichlar's latest CD, Better Things. I'm your host, Robert White. We're going to wrap up our conversation with Barry. What's next for you, Barry? Are there any more book signings on the agenda in the new year?
Yeah, well, one of the things I've tried to do, and it's more through accident than through brilliant planning on my part. I wound up doing a book signing at a coffee shop in downtown Toronto. And the coffee shop owner said he'd love to have me come, and I don't think he was a Christian at all, but I think he just wanted to develop some traffic, again, thinking outside the box. So we set up in the back of the store, and we did this book signing. And we had good traffic over the afternoon. So I'm going to be doing another cafe. There's one down in the Niagara area, which is actually a Christian coffee house, run by Christians, called Conversations Cafe in Beamsville. And in January, I'm going to be doing a book signing on the 17th there. I'm trying to arrange one at a Chapters in Barrie. So there's a few of those going on. And I've also been invited to go over to, a lot of the story of the Excalibur Parchment is set in Wales. And so I've been asked to go over and see if I can build some traction, some market in Wales, get some bookstores, get some book distributors over there interested in the book, and see if we can develop a market over there too. So That's going to take me some time in the new year.
Well, where can people get more information about you and the book?
We have there's a website, www.excaliburparchment.com. The book is available. If you can't make the book signings, the book is available at Amazon.ca, and in the United States, Amazon.com. And because of the British connection, we're also available on Amazon.co.uk. Then there's also Chapters Indigo here in Canada, and also Barnes & Noble in the United States.
Great.
So there's a few platforms. There are some bookstores that are carrying it, some Christian bookstores that I'm aware of. But those are the main areas.
Great. Well, Barry, your time tonight.
Hey, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Arts Connection today, and thank you to my guest, Barry Doyle. And if you miss a broadcast or want to hear it again, look for archive programs on our website at www.selawministries.ca. That's www.selawministries.ca. And be sure to tune in next week for another look at where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, a production of Selaw Ministries, email Robert at selawministries.ca or follow us on Twitter at Selaw13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.